Moncrief on News Talk.
Around the world, breast augmentation is still the most popular surgery, but increasingly, so is the opposite. Breast reduction surgery may be elective, but for many women, it's a necessary way to relieve significant physical stresses on the body. Ailish Fitzgerald is a consultant plastic reconstructive and aesthetic surgeon at the Beacon Hospital in Dublin. Ailish, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean, and thank you for having me on. I'm really happy to be talking to you about this health issue, which is so important for so many women.
And it is a health issue. It's not, I suppose technically it's you could say it's cosmetic, but no one does it for cosmetic reasons.
Well, it is, first off, it certainly is a health issue. Secondly, lots of people do it for aesthetic reasons and there's nothing wrong with that. But it is an operation that is one that has huge positive impacts for women in terms of their overall quality of life. So this is one thing that I think is really important to communicate. And I often will say to patients when I see them for a consultation, it's the fact that breast reduction surgery bears the same improvements in quality of life for patients as does a knee replacement or a hip replacement, which are both operations that are done for, you know, non-cancerous conditions. They're done on an elective basis and nobody blinks an eyelid about them being done. And that's why, you know, breast reduction, I think a lot of women coming for surgery are a bit worried. They think there may be, you know, they may be being vain or self-absorbed or all these things that people tell themselves. And none of those are the case. And it's really important that it is framed as a health issue for women.
And so run us through the, because, you know, a woman may have, you know, been going through her life since she was a teenager with large breasts. So what kind of physical stresses does that put on the body? And, you know, is it things like that they're, you know, it's deleterious to their back, for instance, even like the kind of bra they have to wear?
Yeah, absolutely. There's multiple symptoms. And, you know, prime among those are the symptoms of upper back and neck pain, shoulder pain. Some women will even report pins and needles going down into their arms. Women have awful rashes, particularly in hot weather. They get cuts and chafing from their bras. They get divots or these big dips in their shoulders from the straps of the bra holding up the weight. They'll often report a change in exercise habits. I'd see quite a lot of younger patients who'd say to me, I used to really love gymnastics or GAA or whatever it is. And those young women, a lot of the time, some of them are really amazing and they keep going. They wear two bras and they keep going even though it's very sore. But a certain number of those women will give up sport or modify or change their sports because it's just too uncomfortable to continue. And then there's the sort of knock-on effect in terms of headaches. A lot of women get sort of migraine type headaches from all the muscle tension and so on in their back. So it can affect many, many different aspects of people's daily lives.
Yeah, I mean, imagine it might affect posture as well for a lot of women.
Absolutely, for a few reasons. One is a kind of just the physical weight. It's a physical thing of being pulled forward. But a lot of the time, women will have adopted postures in over their lives to try and mitigate against the unwanted attention they will often receive. So the typical posture is sort of sitting with the shoulders sort of rounded forward, kind of hunched and, you know, kind of being very conscious, kind of going with that, very conscious of where they place themselves in social situations and, you know, watching their profile and where they'll sit at a table at, you know, in a board meeting or a social situation. So there's a lot of kind of secondary effects like that.
Yeah. And if, from the physical point of view, is there an, if you like, an absolute measurement of a large breast, or is it really more to do with if it's out of proportion with the rest of the body?
It's really about proportion. And, you know, sometimes you'll have a degree of asymmetry. So one breast will be bigger than the other. And that's a very common scenario. Everyone has that to a certain extent. But, you know, I suppose what I will say to patients is the language that we have to talk about breast size is bra cup size. And the insurance companies, for better or for worse, have a cutoff point of an F cup. whereby they say that you need to be an F cup or greater in order to have in order to be covered. It's one of their criteria. But that measurement, if you ask any woman, and particularly women with bigger breasts who've had trouble buying bras, say if they go into one shop and they'll be, you know, one size and one brand, a different size. So even within the same shop with the same person measuring them, and sometimes even within a brand, they'll fit into different cup sizes. So it's much more about the relationship of a woman's breasts to her overall height and to the width of her shoulders, the width of her waist and the width of her hips. So it's about balance and proportion.
Now, the surgery itself, is it a bit more onerous and a bit more complicated than breast augmentation surgery?
Some would say that, and that's sort of a truism that has been going around for decades. I would say there are aspects of each which are more complicated than the other. With breast augmentation, you have a pair of implants that need to be minded and you need to follow up. And, you know, they are sometimes placed under the pectoral muscles, which can make it sore, particularly at the initial stages. Whereas a breast reduction, although it's a longer operation with longer scars, may actually be less painful initially than a breast augmentation, depending on where the implant has been placed. So I think as a rule, breast augmentation is usually done on a day case basis. So the patient will come in to hospital in the morning, she'll have her operation, go home the same day. Whereas with breast reduction surgery, certainly traditionally in this country, patients would have stayed in hospital overnight, which may be one of the things that gives rise to that impression of it being a more involved operation.
Yeah. So in breast reduction, where are the, well, I suppose ideally you don't want any scars at all, but where is the potential for scarring in that?
Okay, well, there will always be scars. And this is something that's really important that patients understand. So one of the things that happens when you're a plastic surgeon is that patients expect you to be able to do operations without scars. And that definitely doesn't happen. Mm. What we aim for are good scars. So thin, fine line scars, when the scars are a year old and they're mature, that they should be, you know, barely visible, but they are there. So with breast reduction surgery, there is always a scar that encircles the areola, which is the pink or brown skin that surrounds the nipple. And then there's a scar that comes from the 6 o'clock position on that down to the inframammary crease, which is the fold where the breast meets the chest wall. In most cases, there will also be a scar that runs some of the way along that crease. So very much like where an underwire of a bra would run.
Yeah.
It is sometimes possible to do just the lollipop scar. So just the one around the nipple and running down to the crease. And that's usually where a smaller volume of tissue needs to be removed. And that would depend on an individual patient's characteristics.
Yeah, because I assume in some cases, that's part of that is reducing the amount of skin cover as well in the breast.
Exactly. So it's breast reduction is really about reshaping. So it's not just about cutting half off the side, which would obviously reduce the breast, but would leave a very unaesthetic outcome. So one of the things that might allow, for example, a vertical scar, which is the lollipop scar, is if a patient's got very elastic, good skin, whereas if the skin is a bit more stretched out, if there are stretch marks, loss of elasticity, which often happens with patients as the years go on in particular, then something surgical to remove all that extra skin is needed, as well as taking away the volume from underneath.
Mm. The nipple sensitivity, one hears that can be a common side effect.
Yeah, so it will always, as I say to patients, look, if loss of nipple sensation is a deal breaker for you, you shouldn't have this operation. The potential is for a temporary or a permanent increase, so that's oversensitivity, or decrease in nipple sensation. The typical pattern that I would see with patients is that initially, so in the first few days following surgery, everything is completely numb. And then they will go through a period where the feeling starts to come back. There may then be a period of heightened sensitivity. So for a woman who's had kids, it's very like the breast tenderness or oversensitivity that may happen in pregnancy or when her milk comes in. So that's very familiar to a lot of my patients. And then it, with good sort of scar massage and scar management techniques, it'll settle down. And a lot of patients would sort of say their sensation is maybe 8 out of 10, 10 being what it was preoperatively. It would have to be said, though, that patients don't give a hoot.
Yes.
they really don't care, because they, like with the scarring, which are quite long scars, as I describe them, when you say to patients, are you bothered by the scars? They go, nope, not at all. They don't care, because the benefits they feel from the surgery in terms of their upper back and neck pain and, you know, their ease of clothing choice and their lack of self-consciousness and their ability to exercise without discomfort, all those positives from having had surgery done just far outweigh things like a bit of scarring and slightly reduced nipple sensation.
Yeah. So post-operatively, would you be looking at 6 weeks or so to be kind of careful about things?
Yeah, so like there's kind of phases in healing. So I will usually say to my patients, you know, the first 2 weeks they have dressings and paper stitches because all the stitches are dissolving. You know, they'll be really very ginger about things. Mm. Between week two and week six, which is when I see them back, there will be a variation in terms of how people go. But because it's not a particularly sore operation, the inclination is maybe to overdo it a little bit, and patients will then phone the office and say, oh, I think I might have overdone it slightly. I X or Y, you know, hung out a load of washing or went for a more vigorous walk. So although patients typically feel really good physically and are not in a lot of pain, I still urge them to do really nothing more than walking up until the 6 week post-op appointment. If all is going well at that stage, I would say to them, look, there's no restrictions in terms of exercise. You can lie on your front again. You can do push-ups. You can do burpees if you really want. But kind of work up slowly, bearing in mind you've been off exercise for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
If somebody has a desk-based job, they will usually be okay to go back after a couple of weeks. But, you know, patients are fatigued following surgery. And there's a really common thing that around week three or four, they'll often take a bit of a dip in their mood. They'll say they feel a bit sort of premenstrual, kind of maybe sometimes a little bit weepy, a little bit vulnerable. And if they go back to work prematurely and, you know, they've been off for a couple of weeks and they come back and everyone goes, great, here's a ton of work for you to do, it can actually be around that time that the patients struggle a little bit. So my motto is to kind of hurry slowly. You've one chance at your early recovery. And while you might be able to force yourself back into the office after a week, you should really consider in the totality of your recovery whether that's the best thing to do.
Yeah, mind yourself, and it'll pay its own benefits. Age range, Ailisha, of the patients you get?
Anything from women in their late teens right up until women in their mid-70s.
Hmm.
And I've operated people on all of those ages. And, you know, the younger patients, we need to be sure that the breasts have sort of ceased developing and ceased growing. So that's quite important. I'll often see patients who, and particularly the young women with asymmetry, but they definitely need it. Like, there's no question, but the breasts are still growing and we need to just wait till that's stabilized so that they don't go through having a surgery only to grow some more. And then I have patients in the older age group who say, oh, am I too old for this? And I say to them, why would you be too old? You know, musculoskeletal health and the ability to exercise and move freely gets all the more important as you get older. So anything in that age range will be my norm.
Yeah. Ailish, thank you very much for speaking with us today. That was Ailish Fitzgerald there, a consultant, plastic reconstructive and aesthetic surgeon at the Beacon Hospital in Dublin.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.